The next session we have is Eric. He'll be talking about the evolution of inbound marketing for PLG World. I'd like to tell you a little bit about Eric. Eric is the product manager at HubSpot Academy, and he's going to talk about the evolution of inbound marketing in the product-led growth world. So I'll share the permissions with you, Eric, to share the screen. You can go ahead and start with the presentation.
Great. Thank you so much for having me. I'm going to click share my screen. All right. Can everyone see my slides and hear me all right?
Yes.
Great. So thanks again for having me. My name's Eric Peters. I'm a growth product manager at HubSpot. And today I'm going to be talking about the evolution of inbound marketing for a product-led growth world, which is a topic really near and dear to me, working on HubSpot's Academy, which is an online course provider where we teach thousands of people about inbound marketing all the time. So to start, I thought I would kind of lay the foundation for what the inbound methodology is. And I think one important factor here is that it's not necessarily inbound marketing anymore. The inbound methodology has evolved and companies have evolved. And part of the reason they've done that is because product-led growth has really required it. So inbound is a business strategy. It's not necessarily just a marketing strategy anymore. And we'll get onto that a little bit later, but it's based on attracting a target persona with valuable content, engaging them with product or services that meet their needs, and delighting them by exceeding their expectations. And that part about delighting them and exceeding their expectations is really one of the main ways inbound has evolved over the last 10 years or so. So many of us probably have this view of our company. And there's a slight problem with it, because when we're looking at all of the leads coming into our company and marketing is solely responsible for that, and we're looking at, I'm seeing questions coming in and I'm wondering if they're for me or for.
I know you can continue with the presentation, actually, Eric. We'll take up the questions afterwards.
Okay, so here we go. So with the funnel, we have a problem. Our customers are kind of left over at the end and we're not really thinking of them the way we should be. Our customers are very powerful. They have the power to be our strongest marketers, our most helpful salespeople, and our most helpful customer success people, because they're on the ground using your product, telling other people about it. Think about when you buy something online these days, rarely do you not look at the reviews about it. And those reviews are customers advocating for the product or not advocating for the product. And it's a very powerful thing to activate your customers into being advocates for you. So we dropped the funnel a few years ago and we said, modern businesses, particularly in a product-led growth world, they use this flywheel approach. We think of the flywheel as the modern version of inbound methodology or the inbound marketing. And if you think about it, we're attracting strangers in, we are engaging with them, we're building trust with them, we're deciding who is the right product prospects to be a good fit for our product, and we're converting them into customers. And it really doesn't stop there. When they are customers, we have the opportunity to exceed their expectation, not only meet their need, but exceed them and turn them into promoters. And then that therefore attracts additional strangers. So this flywheel on the right side here, this spins. And the faster it spins, the faster your business grows. So if you think about force, are all the things that make this spin faster, right? So the more demand coming into your website or the, faster we can make the spin, the faster we'll grow. Friction is the opposite. Friction is what keeps it from spinning fast. So all the ways we can decrease friction, we'll be able to go faster and grow faster. So now product-led growth, I got this definition from OpenView Venture Capital. They're a VC here in Boston. PLG is a go-to-market strategy that relies on using your product as the main vehicle to acquire, activate, and retain users. That sounds an awful lot like the flywheel, doesn't it? We're using the product to make that flywheel spin faster, to remove friction and to speed it up. So in a PLG world, your product adds force and removes friction to your flywheel. So it's responsible for acquiring and upgrading users in a programmatic way. It offers value to the market. It has to achieve a product market fit of some sort. And then it turns users into promoters. And the product is basically taking more and more responsibility for those numbers that sales and marketing teams and services teams used to own. And that's where the evolution of inbound marketing is happening in a PLG world. So for instance, in the attract stage, when we're attracting people in, you want to make it as easy to try and evaluate your product as possible. You don't necessarily want the user to have to read a bunch of, you know, content on your website or talk to a sales rep to decide for themselves whether they might be a fit. Easy sign up flow, a freemium model is great for this, or trials can be great for this, and self-service onboarding. These are all ways that, for instance, at HubSpot, we use HubSpot Academy to help our users self-service onboard. That's also really important because often in B2B SaaS, software as a service, the one user who's buying the software is often not the same user who is using the software. And the more users at a given account that we can have be active in our software in HubSpot, the more likely they are to stay customers for a longer period of time. The software gets stickier as more people learn it. So the first person who buys the software isn't getting that white glove, you know, welcome, handholding, and onboarding that user 2, 3, 4, and 5 are getting. And we need to have, you know, resources there for users 2 through 5 to learn the software. And that really comes into, you know, the core product. How easy is it to learn? And also, how easy is it to teach? So we measure when somebody signs up for the free version of our software, how quickly we can activate them, right? Like their aha moment, so to speak. That is a number that we, you know, hold very closely to the overall performance of our systems, because we need as many people to go from signing up to activating as possible for them to see the real value. They're that much more likely to stick around and upgrade from there when they see that activation moment. We also focus a lot on learnability. As I was saying, your software these days, when you don't have a salesperson or a services person to help your new users learn the software, you need it to be learnable. It needs to be somewhat intuitive, or at least, you know, provide the resources like a HubSpot Academy or a documentation to help users self-educate. That also means making it teachable. So for instance, our users will often assign HubSpot Academy resources to each other to help them learn HubSpot. And finally, I think this is my favorite part of the flywheel, the delight part of the flywheel. So virality and advocacy are built in. So if you make your software easy to share your product, easy to advocate for your product, you will basically turn your customers into your biggest marketing team. We've reached an age where your marketing team has the capacity, your customer base has the capacity to be a much louder and trusted stakeholder for your business. Take advantage of the fact that your customers are advocates for you and make sure they're delighted in every possible way. You know, you meet their needs and exceed them. So some of the ways that we help our customers help us is by giving them user ways to create user-generated content. We have a couple of free tools like Website Creator, Make My Persona. These are all tools that the user can, you know, do something valuable for themselves, but then they produce some content that they can share out with their team and kind of spread the brand awareness of HubSpot internally. Similarly, ratings and reviews. As I was saying, it's so rare to buy anything these days without, you know, looking for what a, you know, existing customer thinks of the software. You know, how do you lean into that? How do you ask your users to review you at the right time, or in the right place, or after the right amount of time? That's you know, super important for helping your reviews and your averages. And then last but finally, but not least, building virality in. So many companies, I think of virality as, you know, our company is attracting all this attention and we can kind of slot in a banner ad for ourselves in this piece of the product, and external people who see it will click through hopefully and sign up or use our product. I think this is kind of like a halfway way to think about virality, which virality works a lot better when you build it into the product natively. So the user who's sharing something about your product is getting just as much value by other people seeing it as those who are not. The, you know, example I love to use for this is Uber's ride sharing or shared payments feature, where, you know, one user wants the other user to split the fare in the Uber in the ride. So of course they're going to, you know, make sure the second user downloads Uber, signs up so that they can do that. It's beneficial to both. The user one pays half the amount for the ride, user two can then, you know, participate in the payment. So building virality in is a big opportunity for a lot of SaaS companies. And that's all I had to cover. The evolution of inbound marketing for a product-led growth world is really all about, you know, thinking about your company as a flywheel rather than a funnel, and taking advantage or enabling your customers to be advocates for you in a really systemic, programmatic way that takes a lot of the effort off of your marketing teams, sales teams, and customer success teams. Anytime those teams are doing something that it could be automated, chances are it probably should be automated.
Hey, thank you so much, Eric. That was a great presentation. We'll take up the questions now. So the first question that we have is, what is the difference between inbound marketing and sales funnel?
Sorry, I just seem to lose my Zoom. So inbound marketing versus, sorry, say that again.
So what is the difference between inbound marketing and a sales funnel?
So when you think of, like I was saying in the first slide, inbound marketing is a cycle. It is, you know, more than just your marketing team's responsibility. Every team at HubSpot is responsible for, the experience of that flywheel, whether you're, you know, tangentially responsible for it or directly. I think sales funnels are great for measuring, you know, pipeline and productivity in kind of a microcosm. But when you think about your business as a whole, you want to think about the, you know, attract stage, delight stage, and engage stage, and how you are adding force or removing friction. That is, I think, core to inbound versus a typical funnel.
Got it. So the next question that we have is, how do I choose between freemium and free trial as a business owner to optimize my results?
I think anytime you're making a prioritization or decision between, you know, two options, I would experiment with both. I think this largely depends on how quickly they can see value. If you create a free version of your product, you better like have a very simple enough product where they can onboard themselves and learn about it and use it, because you're gonna have so many people in there that it's not gonna be cost effective for you to help each of them individually. At HubSpot, we use both freemium and trial only because the higher tiers of our software do tend to, you know, require a little bit more handholding. So a trial basically tells a sales rep, okay, this person's in the software, let's see what they're doing in there in our more pro features. And that sales rep can be a consultative person in supporting their use of that trial to see what they need. Whereas freemium, it's completely, you know, hands-off, and, you know, the users in there, we have built-in flows and built-in demos to help users get started and activate in the freemium. But I think it's on a per company basis. I would say, you know, try both, see what takes less effort to create an MVP for, and go from there. It's a matter of experimentation and knowing, you know, what's the time to value for your specific audience in your specific product.
Got it. The next question that we have is, how inbound marketing has redefined email marketing?
So email marketing is interesting. I used to do a lot of email marketing. I was a typical outbound marketer, I think, when I started in my career. And that's what made inbound so attractive to me, is because I didn't have to feel bad for spamming people and downloading lists and spamming people. Inbound marketing would dictate that you use email at a different part of the funnel. You use email in your engage part of your flywheel rather than your attract part. So you only ever email, and nowadays it's even more important because email is, you know, so often abused by marketers. It's so important to only ever email people who are subscribed to you, who, you know, actively say, yes, I wanted to get this type of email from you. Not even just any email, but this one you're sending me. And inbound marketing has really changed the way we think about, you know, who we're sending to, what we're sending them, and why we're sending it to them. We want the right email to go to the right person at the right time. So, you know, marketing automation tools have gotten incredibly advanced. I think email marketing is all about personalization and behavior-based emails. It should be sent on their time based on their actions, not, you know, our time and our campaign date. Like when we create a new piece of content, that doesn't mean that content immediately gets emailed out to everyone. We pick very carefully who seems to have the behaviors on our website that would match up with who should get that email. So we'll, you know, do a lot of trigger nurturing that way.
Got it. So the next question we have is, what is the real cost of inbound marketing? How do you measure it?
So inbound marketing is interesting. In some ways, it seems expensive because you're putting a lot of effort in and you're seeing very little results early on. But in the long run, it's incredibly cheap because those results compound on themselves over and over. So let's just take one channel, for example. Let's look at the HubSpot marketing blog. That's where we get a lot of our demand from. And that started out, you know, relatively small. It was, you know, we post a blog, you know, every couple of days. Nowadays we post 3 blogs a week and optimize 1 or 2 past blogs. So we think of that blog as this like demand engine that we're constantly optimizing. We're going back to old blogs, updating them, adding call to actions to them to generate leads from those blogs. And it's a, you know, continuously evolving thing. So you don't necessarily, so your new blog posts coming out are not necessarily the ones that are generating all the demand. It's those old ones. We have, you know, 5-year-old blog posts that are generating thousands of leads per month because they happen to rank, you know, for some keyword that is highly relevant to what HubSpot offers. So there's a course in HubSpot Academy. It's relatively advanced SEO course, kind of at the intersection of SEO and blogging. It's called the Search Insights Report course. It goes into our strategy for blogging and figuring out which keywords are, you know, the best keywords to drive traffic to from your blog. And I guess to make a relatively long answer short, the cost of inbound is incredibly cheap in the long term. You have to put in the effort and you have to build up the content library and catalog, and you have to think about content as it's like a machine that's attracting an audience in that you're constantly optimizing. Because then when you get that organic traffic coming in, that's pretty much free. Like we have blogs that, you know, might have taken, you know, a week to produce from 5 years ago that are still generating thousands and thousands of leads. So in that way, inbound is extremely cheap for marketing.
Got it. So the next question we have is inbound marketing approach relevant for a service-led growth? If yes, how different is it from inbound for a product-led growth? If no, why?
I think it is. I think in a service-led growth situation, the principles of attracting the most relevant people in, finding the personas who are searching for information about a problem that you solve. I think that's fundamental to inbound, is like, you're not going and seeking out and spraying and praying. You're creating a solution to someone who has a problem, and you're creating education to help solve that problem. And by them finding you and finding your solution to that problem, you have identified them as a fit for your product. So I think whether it's service-led or product-led, that, you know, the rules of inbound still apply. You want to attract the right person in, engage with them, build trust with them through that educational content. And really, like, you're turning your marketers into educators. You're turning your salespeople into doctors. We love in our content in HubSpot Academy, we love to use the doctor metaphor for salespeople because it really turns into a conversation where a salesperson is saying, let me see if you're a fit for this. Let me prescribe you the right thing based on the problems you're describing for me. It's not me trying to push my software on you because you're already coming to me saying, you know, we have this problem with content marketing. Okay, let me learn more about that problem and figure out if HubSpot is a fit, you know, for your organization. That's how you get really long-lasting customers, really trustworthy customers that love your sales or love your marketing experience because they feel, you know, genuinely helped and enabled and supported before they even become customers. I think so many companies that don't practice inbound marketing often think we only have to really care about them once they're customers. But that, you know, welcome experience, that initial like time they visit your website up until, you know, forever, that's when you need to care about the experience you're creating for them.
Got it. So the next question we have is, Eric, how do I make my customers as my brand ambassadors?
So there are a lot of ways. I think the most simple way to put it is to exceed their expectations. So if you think of your product or service as having a product market fit, hopefully attracting someone who has a need. If you can build in little delight moments into your product that go above and beyond their expectation, it's like little like light bulbs go off in their brain and they say, oh, I found something really, really interesting here. I think it's human nature to find like pleasure in telling other people about something exciting you found, right? When I read a really good book, like I want to tell my whole team about it. It makes me feel smart because I found this cool book, right? It's the same with your product. If you built in delight moments, you know, that are exciting, for instance, say in HubSpot, so HubSpot's a marketing automation system in one of our hubs, and you're creating a blog post. What most people don't realize when they're buying the software, they think, okay, yeah, I can create blog posts. I can publish blogs on my website. What they don't realize is that the blog post is going to actually read your blog and make sure that it's like SEO optimized and provide a bunch of performance enhancing suggestions to you about that blog post. And that is such a delight feature. It's like, oh wow, HubSpot's actually doing some of this work for me. It's like having this professional SEO consultant built into the system to tell me, you know, how to make my blog post rank higher in Google. So those little moments, if you can build them in, you can really create some powerful, what I would call like delight moments, similar to the way a new freemium user has an activation point. A delight moment is similar to that, but for your existing customers.
Got it. Next question we have is, how predictable are sales calls taken or made in inbound versus outbound strategy?
So having only worked in one other outbound kind of sales organization, I can say that the big difference with sales calls in an inbound org is that they have to happen very quickly. So user, you know, becomes a lead. They have your company top of mind. Sales has an SLA to call within 5 minutes to say, hey, I saw you reading this ebook about content marketing. Let's chat about some of the problems you're having there or what have you. Based on, you know, based on the volume that we're getting in those leads, we can make the productivity of our sales team extremely predictable and forecastable, because we know that if we generate 1,000 leads, you know, this percentage of them will result in qualified leads, this percentage will result in sales qualified leads, and so on. So I think, you know, as opposed to like campaigning and running marketing campaigns where you're creating 10,000 leads all at once and then they kind of die out and then you have to do it all over again and then they die out, then you have to do it all over again and then they die out. Like, that's so much less predictable and less forecastable than having this consistent flow of 3,000 leads every month that your sales team gets really good at handling because they're downloading, you know, the same ebooks, they're reading the same blogs. And I think the sales team would much rather, you know, work the very predictable, consistent stream of leads than suddenly the marketing team is running this new campaign that's unlike anything we've necessarily done. Who knows how much prep they've given us to like really follow up on those leads, et cetera.
So I think we'll take up one last question here. What are the 10 things that you must do in inbound marketing and the 10 things you must avoid at all costs?
Inbound marketing, you have to do persona research. HubSpot has a free, it's called Make My Persona. It's a persona building tool. Highly recommend you check it out and build out your persona, share it with your team, become friends with those people. Those personas guide everything to do with your marketing and sales. So as one would be persona research. Two is content creation, creating educational content. Education, you know, enables companies to build trust in a way that traditional marketing simply doesn't. It also lines up nicely with digital marketing and creating good online experiences. Three would be exceeding the expectations of your customers. You need to take, you know, whatever you offered them and go beyond, and then they will advocate for you. Those three things are a core part of the full flywheel. Things to avoid: do not, as you know, short-sighted as it is, do not buy lists. Do not buy people's information. It's bad for your email deliverability rates, because when they mark you as spam or when they don't open your email over and over, you know, if you send someone 5 emails and they never open them, Google will literally like lower your deliverability score and you will be sending less emails, having less emails be delivered over time. So you can actually hurt your company by spamming people and being, you know, too outbound oriented. So do not buy lists and do not spam people. Two, I would say, do not be overtly promotional too early on in the flywheel. Make sure that the message you're pushing out is directed and takes into the context that the user is in your flywheel. So you have your kind of attract stage messaging versus your engage stage messaging be different. I think it's pretty common for companies to kind of go in for the sell a little bit too quick when the audience is really in that like nurturing, educate me mode. Because again, if they're coming to you, they might not necessarily be like ready to buy at that moment. That's fine. But you need to keep them happy and engaged and educated so that when they do have a need, they remember, oh, that HubSpot, they're great. I want to go buy from them. You can't jump too quick into sell mode. And then three, I would say, don't forget about your customers. Like, I think it's so easy for companies to say, oh, salespeople are like the most important team in the company because they bring in the new people, or marketing, or like any of your front office teams tend to get all the love. Your customer success team, if you're in a SaaS business, is actually responsible for a lot more revenue coming in every month than your sales team. You can't do anything without all three playing equally beneficial roles in the overall experience. So invest in your customer success team because they're the ones who are going to turn your customers into advocates. And one of the ways you can invest in them is by building product or, you know, augmenting product to make their lives easier. So when your customer success team says, hey, I'm having the same conversation 50 times a month with all of these different companies, that's when you want to build something that can enable that faster and better.
Oh, thank you so much, Eric. That was really great having you. And thanks for the great presentation and answering all those questions. We still have like a ton of questions for you, but I'll share all those with you. Probably you can answer to them and we'll send back the answers to our community members.
Great. Thanks all. Have a good one.
Thanks, Eric.
Hey, thank you for watching the recording. Do check us out at Amplus B2B Bench for more such killer content. Also, don't forget to go to www.amplus.com and book your free demo for Amplus Enterprise version to rank your next customer.